Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
All right. Welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Today is a little bit of a,
Big day.
Big day.
We have prepared more for this episode than all of them put together.
Yeah, 100%.
In fact, we recorded 40 minutes of content on Wednesday and
erased it all. All of it. We were like, that was bad. Start over. I saw a thing today that I posted on our Instagram that said, on the surface, we are cool as a cucumber, but inside we're like squirrels in traffic. This is basically so us today.
We're working on that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So today we are entitling our episode Enablers. So a lot of people that are listening have probably asked themselves, and honestly have asked us as well, like, how are these things able to continue for so long? How have we not been educated enough and put enough measures in place to keep children and people safe, and also to rescue kids or people out of these horrible situations? And how on earth have bad people been able to operate in roles in a lot of places, but today specifically churches, where they have access to children and influence? All in the name of the gospel. I know, sorry. So the answer to this enormous question that we have gotten in many different versions boils down to enablers. So Lori, what's an enabler?
So enablers, we can kind of break that down into sort of three categories. So there are the bystanders. Those are the people who are there, but they really don't know what's going on. Maybe they don't know what's going on because there's no opportunity. Maybe they don't know what's going on because they're not informed enough to see what's in front of them and call it what it is. But those are the bystanders. Then there are those that we will call the complicit ones. So those are people who maybe don't have a completely direct hand in the abuse, but they knowingly help the abuse happen. Mm-hmm. They're not unaware and go, oops, like, I didn't mean to, but they know it and they're doing it.
Yeah, this is like the person in my life who never physically touched me, but who drove me to have other people do this. So that's complicit.
Clearly.
Yeah.
And in between those two things are what we're calling the kind of direct enablers, right? So these are people who know that the abuse is going on, but they ignore it to protect the institution or their reputation.
Yeah. So today, we're going to highlight and timeline for you one specific organization that we've been referencing throughout. We keep in our investigations episode, all throughout our podcast and the episodes, we've been talking about this organization, and we've been really careful not to name names, but some current circumstances have come up that we feel the need that it's important. It's important for us to talk about them directly because we've learned that they're not a safe organization in terms of covering up sexual abuse. So today we are talking about the chapel.
The chapel.
The right. Chapel.
So I really want to emphasize that we tried so hard to keep it from coming to this.
We did.
Including as recently as, you know, a couple weeks ago, with a very direct request for an apology.
Yeah.
An apology that we shouldn't have had to ask for. That should have been clear from them that they wanted to apologize. We did eventually, after a week or so after the request, got an apology, but it was a really, really bad apology. It was an apology that, as a parent, I would never have accepted from my kids. Mm-hmm. It was an apology followed by lots of buts and explanations. It was a teeny tiny little apology followed by lots and lots of, I didn't mean it. It wasn't my intent. So I'm basically, I'm sorry that you felt that way.
Yeah.
Right. Was that?
Yeah. That's definitely what it felt like.
Yes. And then when we addressed the bad apology, because we were even at that point still trying to kind of keep things moving forward, we were told that they would talk about it. And that was last Friday, and we've heard nothing since then, which again, maybe doesn't seem like a very long time, but if someone is truly broken, that they have gotten it wrong and they have the right heart about it, they're not going to be able to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. They're going to be saying and feeling, oh my gosh, right? I did that. So I hurt someone.
Especially with this. I mean, this is like on this scale, this level of what we're talking about. I mean, yeah. How do you, yeah.
Right.
So also since last Friday, so much has been brought to our attention. Again, because of what people put pieces together, people know kind of what we're talking about here. And so, a lot of information has come to our attention.
So how has that been for you to hear all that?
Oh my goodness. Like roller coaster. I mean, I mentioned last time I want to sleep for a decade. That hasn't changed. Like, still putting it out there. Anyone that can allow me to sleep for a decade wins the prize of I don't know what. But
how about one night?
That'd I mean, be nice, yeah, sure.
That'd be good.
Yeah, it's been a lot of information. A lot of it is super validating. Like, oh my gosh, I'm not crazy, because we can't all be crazy. All of these people cannot be crazy. Right. And the one thing in common that we have being the chapel, is the only thing that's not crazy. Like, we're not crazy, you know? But it's also devastating. It's devastating that this keeps happening. It's devastating that what people have gone through. I mean,
right.
Yeah, it's been a lot, but helpful a lot, I guess. No, does that even make sense? Like we said, squirrel in traffic. That's essentially it.
The picture in my mind is
I know,
so vivid.
Me too. No, me too. All right, so let's start at the beginning, I guess, and tell you a little bit about my specific story with the chapel, enabling my abusers to continue. So my family and I started going to the chapel in late 1999, early 2000. We're going to rush through this because nobody wants to hear like all the, you know.
And that was part of our problem with the like, last time we tried this.
The day I was born, you know. Like, okay, shut up.
Okay, so let's comment on the fact that we aren't talking about all the things that came like with the abuse that happened physically in the church.
No.
That's not the chapel.
Mm-mm. No, okay. We're not. Yeah.
We want to be clear.
But we are talking about when we talked about in our investigations episode that I was going to the chapel when I was in those like late middle school, high school years and was told to stop talking about it and was told to pretty much get it together or be kicked out of youth group. So yeah. So that's where that started. So same story that we keep saying, you know, they went from church to church to church. They rose to the top as volunteers. They were helpful. They had charisma, all the things. Same thing. They moved from the church that we had been in to the chapel and, same story. They rose to the top. So someone very, very close to them, worked there, who is now actually still there as one of the executive pastors at the church. And this really smoothed the way for them to be able to, rise to the top of all of these volunteer, all of these ministries, easily because they hid behind his name. They hid behind his titles. It was much easier to be protected. I know for a fact that it was like, oh, you're so-and-so's, you know, acquaintance or whatever.
Acquaintance, yeah.
I know. Sorry.
Connected to that person.
Connected. Yes. Okay. Total side note, because we're like squirrels in traffic. Are we podcasters now? Can we just like address that? Like, because you know, like people on YouTube are called YouTubers.
Right.
Does that make us podcasters?
At what point do you transition from we are doing a podcast to we're podcasters?
We're podcasters.
Now.
Hello. Oh my God.
You said someone offered to help us have like
studio time. I was like, what does that even mean?
Can Silas come with us?
I know.
If he can, that's not a thing.
There's studios for these things.
Actually, we are sitting in the room that was once my son's recording studio for his music.
Good vibes, good energy in here.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Okay.
Squirrels in traffic.
There
okay.
We go. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, because it was so easy for them to kind of rise through the ranks of these ministries. The complicit abuser in my story, like we said before, the person who wasn't directly involved, but who drove me to the places to have the abuse happen and who was very, you know, very much in the know of what was happening, actually became very heavily involved in the counseling ministry at the chapel. And for years was specifically counseling survivors of sexual abuse. So
let's just pause there for a second. Let's just pause there for a moment of silence.
We don't do silence.
Like, that would be weird in a podcast.
We only do silence when we have to start over. And it's like, oh, I didn't know you were recording. I listened to that one again the other day and I was like, we are so dumb.
Well, everybody knows that. That's a good thing.
It's fine.
We don't pretend to be more than we are.
Right.
We're just here.
We're just here.
Telling our thing.
Okay. So yeah. So over time, you know, I started to have some, you know, I had started seeing Lori. I'd started unpacking some of the trauma and the abuse and trying to kind of hold on to that church me persona and that, like, you know, my life is perfect and please don't look over there because all the things. But then I had a daughter and so all the boxes started to open. I'd been working with Lori for about 2 years. And the boxes were just opening. There was nothing I could really do to stop it. Believe me, I tried. Like, it was like, nope, nope, nope. Don't look over there. Don't look over there. This is the only thing I need help with. Don't look over there.
Yeah. That was fun. That was good time.
Wasn't it good time? Really good. We were just so cute.
We were way less cute back then. We've gotten way cuter over time.
Yeah, no, we have. Yeah. But yeah, so, so that was happening. I had kept it secret. I hadn't told literally anyone except my husband and my in-laws that I was doing this because, again, the narrative has always been, we don't talk about this. We don't talk to other people about it. If you need counseling, you only do biblical counseling with our approved people. We don't talk about this. So I already knew that having Lori in my life was going to be an explosive thing. Little did we know.
Right?
We could just not keep laughing and this is so not funny. Okay. So in August 2019, I still wasn't talking about all the details. A lot of the boxes were open, but definitely not all of them. But I had a meltdown at an event that I was at, and the person who is both connected, very connected to the chapel and also to my abusers, kind of saw that unfold. And so I went to him and began this conversation with basically like, help, you know, I've been seeing someone to work through this trauma and this, this stuff in my life. And he acknowledged like, yeah, super unhealthy dynamics. I knew about some of that stuff. And, you know, I explained to him that being with certain people who were involved in my abuse was super triggering to me. And he agreed that change needed to happen. So then in late September, the first boundary was set with my abusers. Super basic. Hey, I've been seeing someone about my trauma. And P.S. people who have been involved in the abuse can't come to holidays.
No, I want to comment. We spent a really long time and had so many conversations about what to say in this meeting because we really were trying. At that point, all the boxes weren't open. And so we were really trying not to throw a grenade into the middle of this, just trying to provide for more safety and more comfort.
Yeah, I was still very much half and half with church me. I was still very much like, I'm gonna preserve this life that I've managed to preserve. So even though that was getting harder and harder and harder to do, it was like I was still very much pushing back, like, no, I'm not opening that box because it's going to wreck what I've tried so hard to hang on to. So we had this conversation. Very basic. Literally, the conversation was 2 minutes and then it was like thrown out. Like, the response was basically like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. That's fine. So anyways, what are we doing for the next event? And it was like, what? Reaction was brushed off. And then the next morning, my complicit abuser starts telling other people, including this staff member at the chapel, this is what Kate does. She's crazy. You know, whatever. This person, she also calls me the next morning and lays on the guilt trip. I mean, thick, people, like thick. How could you do this to us? And you owe us and this other abuser an apology. simply for saying, hey, these things trigger me, and hey, I've been talking to someone about my trauma. That's, I owe people an apology for talking about my trauma.
So, right. So all that, all the preparation that I was just talking about, that wasn't for that conversation. Why did you let me say that? That wasn't.
Well,
right?
It kind of was though. Cause remember, no. We had a lot of conversations and then it was like, we decided we were going to do it without you.
Good plan.
Was our mistake right out of the gate.
That's true. So that's true. There was conversation, but the big buildup was for November of 2019 where we actually sat down.
Yeah. So between September and November, just like so much guilt. I mean, this complicit abuser would literally call me and just like crying and guilting. And I mean, this went on for a month, literally. And so again, I'm saying to this person that's close to them and close to me who works at the chapel, you know, this can't go on. Like, this is not good. Like, we opened the door, but we didn't open it enough for anything to change. But like, what do we do, basically? So November 2019 is, we have this meeting. So in the meeting is myself and my husband and Lori and my abusers and two of them. And this person who was on staff at the chapel and his wife. So much time and energy, as Lori said, we collaborated, as much time as we put into this outline today, we just kept reworking it and we were trying so hard to preserve the church me. I was trying so hard to preserve this church me, like, this is my life. Let's not mess it up.
Wanting to do it right.
Wanting to set boundaries, but also be able to move forward from that.
Not to be cruel or like,
no,
trying to not shame at all. Or blame people. Like all the things.
I mean, we said all of that. Yeah. Right. Like, this is not the intention here. It's just truly about my mental stability and exactly.
So we literally created a document that Kate read from at this meeting because we were being so careful to try to not like say it in a way that went wrong. So Kate just almost totally like sprayed herself with coffee.
I know,
just
that would have been so unfortunate because I love this hoodie.
I know, so sad. Anyway, okay.
So in short, I guess the meeting went horrifically. I mean, it went exactly as I guess part of me knew that it would. But also we were just, it went horribly. I mean, there was yelling. At one point, Lori stood up and was like, not yelling on our part, to be clear. I don't think anyone yells from my side of the table.
So there was just a lot of immediately before Kate even really had more than almost like 10 words out, there was the whole narrative was being said again.
Yeah.
We did everything we could. We're so sad that we're having this conversation again. Don't you understand what we've been through? Like the whole nine yards of don't look over here. We don't want to talk about it. All they were really being asked to do was to listen. Mm-hmm. To listen actively. So all of you out there who've ever done counseling, like the active listening of, okay, listen, but then let the person know that you're hearing what they're saying. That's all that they were being asked to do. Mind you, they were told at the beginning of the meeting, we promise you will have an opportunity to comment. We're just asking you to hold your comments until the end so that Kate can get through this. This is really hard for her. And they were unwilling to do that.
Yeah. It was so much. I mean, all the defenses went up. I mean, like you said, I got through two sentences and already lies and defenses are just being thrown out into the room. Like it's like literally when you have like a caged animal, that's what it looked like. It was right.
Oh yeah.
Honestly,
all I could think was, yep. You know, all really, unfortunately, you people think that you're like shutting this down, but all you're really doing is validating for me even more. Right. There it is.
Which is essentially what happened. So watching this reaction opened all those boxes that I was trying desperately to keep closed. It was earth shattering to me because it was like, I have been trying so hard to do the whole don't look over there. Don't look over there. We're not putting that together. We're not opening that. Lori would say to me, are we, you know, like she would get close to it and I'd be like, nope, bye, you know?
But you couldn't really leave me.
I never, hello. But watching this reaction, it was like completely out of my control. All the boxes opened and it was like, oh my goodness. Like, I guess I have to face this now because there's no going back. Really, there was no going back after that. So the next morning, they ran. So they were asked at the end of the meeting to write a letter to me, basically just indicating that they had heard what I said and that they, I don't even know, just that they heard what I said.
They were asked to send something to me.
Yeah.
Basically describing what they heard Kate saying.
Yeah. Which Lori became the enemy, of course, because she is the person that I had chosen to talk to about these things. And that person historically has always been put out, shoved out, like, get away from this. You don't, you know, like we've said, the lies come flying out and that person gets to get pushed away.
Which was terrifying for you.
Absolutely. I thought that for sure that was going to happen. I was 100% sure that they were going to somehow manipulate the situation again. And you were going to be like, you know what? I don't think I can really stick with you in this, because that had happened time and time and time again. So those days were, that? I mean, ask my husband, not good. So the next morning we find out that they ran directly to the chapel. They went to, which was basically their hiding place, their fortress. Like, it was everything to them. It was like their reputation and where they felt the most.
Well, it's there. Don't look over here. Look, we're great people.
Yeah,
look at us.
It's their protection, literally. Yeah.
We're fine.
So they ran immediately to the person who was the director of the counseling ministry. Again, my complicit abuser is very close to him. Email, and we don't know, I guess, if he advised them to not write the letter, but either way, they said that he advised them not to write the letter at all. They basically said, like, we're not going to write this letter. So, like, oh, and there was, like, almost a threatening, like, the wording of the email saying they weren't going to write the letter was basically, like, we're going to bury you. Right?
Was it?
It was definitely the tone. So emails were exchanged between Lori and, this person that was the director of the counseling ministry and
your abusers
and my abusers, in hopes that maybe we can, you know, maybe we can do something here, move things along, whatever. Instead of positive progress, they did some petty things that were, just damaging, like just stupid, but damaging. Really to just make our lives harder. Again, it's kind of like, we're going to bury, like, we'll cut, we're just all the things.
We're going to show you, you're not going to get away with this,
yeah,
was the message.
Right. You can't live without us, basically was the message. Guess what? I can.
Yes.
I know, right? Okay. It's your turn to talk because my voice is tired.
Okay. All right. So January of 2020, this is now 2 months after that meeting. I go to the director of the counseling ministry, right? So we had exchanged emails because Kate's abusers had looped him in. So I scheduled a meeting to talk to him. So at that point, we were starting to hear about some of the Circle C stuff and really thought that there might be a culture change that would make it possible for the chapel to actually get behind support.
So, sorry, if you're listening and you're not from Western New York, you might not know about the Circle C stuff.
Right.
So
there's that.
Circle C is a student camp. I think it's like ages 8 through 18 or something. In, I don't know, some part of Western New York. And
Delavan.
Okay. And the director of that camp, Wayne Arum, there was like all these women that came forward that said that he used to be a youth pastor at the chapel, and as well as the director of this camp. And all these women across decades, like decades apart in age from each other, who came forward and said that Wayne had sexually abused them. And it was super messy. So I'm just going to leave it there for now. But that's what the Circle C stuff is about.
Yeah. Circle C, Wayne Arum, like there's plenty of media out there on it because it kind of became something that's bigger. There are so many women that came forward that it's out there. So the meeting, we had a twofold intent here. First, we were hoping to see if the counseling pastor and I could work together to move things forward. And also because we all agreed. So Kate and her husband, the executive pastor and his wife, and I all agreed that it was incredibly inappropriate that the complicit abuser was a volunteer in the counseling ministry. So tried to discuss her role at this meeting, try to talk about why we were all concerned, even though we weren't talking about all the whole puzzle pieces. Things like, okay, so this complicit abuser was talking with Kate and the executive pastor person, talking with them about clients, people she was seeing in the counseling ministry who had been sexually abused. Okay, that's bad enough, right? Obviously, we all understand that is not okay.
Hello.
It's just horrendous, right? Not okay. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, she was talking about these women that she was supposedly helping with skepticism about their story.
Yeah.
So completely inappropriate. And oh, by the way, who, what reasonable, kind, loving, caring person talks about those things with someone else who has an abuse history of her own? Mm-hmm. Like, it's bad all around, but that just is the cherry on the poop sundae. That's kind of
what
disgusting.
Does that even mean?
I don't even know.
Oh my God. You know, someone made cookies for us at work. Oh, this is
okay.
Such
wait, we go
an
from
aside.
Poop sundae to cookies? Ew.
No, because they're called, what did Julie call it? She called them like camel poop cookies or something. And I was like, why would you call a food that? That's terrible. And she's like, no, because they look like camel poop. But I'm like, do you know what camel poop
them?
Looks like? Yeah, they were actually really good.
Okay.
But
I don't know that I would taste them after
I know.
That.
They kind of did though. They were kind of this okay. like pile. Anyway.
Do we? Okay. Anyway. Right. Okay. Squirrels in traffic. There it is. Okay. Okay. So she was talking about the people she was counseling with skepticism. There was also this completely inappropriate reaction to basic boundaries, which anyone in a counseling role should absolutely be able to navigate through those waters reasonably, right?
Oh, yeah.
On top of this, there was a history of manipulative, guilting, enabling, gaslighting kind of behaviors that created a significant concern about this person's ability to, if you can't handle your own issues well, I think anybody in their right mind understands that you should not be in a position where you're supposedly helping other people handle their issues. Mm-hmm. However, in spite of all of that, the person in the counseling
and,
ministry,
sorry,
yeah, go.
In you, spite of Lori, yeah. you, we should have like buttons. Oh my God, with like a light. Like I want to talk now.
Okay, super cool.
And also in spite of Lori and her professional clinical background, right? So she's not just some Joe Blow who's my friend coming to these people and saying all of these things. Like she's also a clinician. She's also a professional who's been doing this for, I don't know, like 80 years.
Oh, thank you very much for
I'm
that.
I'm kidding. I'm
so
sorry.
Nice. Over 30.
I got to tell you what Evelyn said to me the other day, but I'm not now because we keep doing this.
Okay. So yes, I've been doing this a really long time, working with trauma for a really long time. And I was a known person to the chapel because I was very heavily involved in one of the ministries there and volunteering a ton of my time and energy to serve. So I'm not just a nobody. Mm-hmm.
You somebody.
I'm a somebody. I'm sure there's a song for that. Okay. Not the song we talked about earlier. Okay. So unfortunately, the head of the counseling ministry says that Kate's complicit abuser could still serve in her role because he said that people can still be useful even in areas where they have a blind spot, that he has seen that happen way too much. And there was a whole narrative of, yeah, we don't want to be kind of basically getting in each other's business. So I'll do me and you do you. And there we go. One of the other executive pastors, not the one we referenced
yeah,
before.
Yeah, there's two executive pastors, which is very confusing,
even, right?
But you know.
So the other executive pastor was looped into the email conversation, not by me, but by the counseling pastor. And when I followed up with him about this, again, directly saying, hey, like, I'm still concerned. And he's saying it's fine, but I just going on record saying, I still, and this is why I think it's not fine. He said, well, you know, that's his area and, you know, it's his authority to decide who serves where. And so that was that. At that point, there mm-hmm. was kind of...
It was just a wall. It was like hitting your face against a wall. Yeah. So that... Yeah.
Okay. So Kate and I have debated whether or not we even need to say this next part, but I feel compelled to say it. Okay. So at this point, it is so clear to us based on so much that has come to us. And those of you who have brought us information, we're so grateful because it really has given perspective on the fact that while it may look like, okay, well, you know, maybe that was just an honest mistake. They should have been more sensitive to doing it right, because there were things that came before us that should have made them so heartbroken to know that they had failed someone before us. They should have been so sensitized to not doing it wrong again that it should have been an immediate, absolutely, we're not taking even the tiniest bit of a chance that someone would be wounded by our failure to act. But that is not what happened.
No.
Instead, we wait and wait and wait for progress. And meanwhile, we keep putting the puzzle pieces together. And as we do, Kate continues to face the whole of the truth.
Mm-hmm. Like I said before, the meeting opened the boxes. There was no going back once that happened. And so we had to unpack the boxes. And that was like a year of hell unpacking them. But we had to. But so after Lori went to the director of the counseling ministry, guess what? The threats being left at my house, the people creeping around my house, as you might have seen the video that we posted on social media, began. Isn't that interesting?
Well, continued. It didn't begin.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it really continued. But it got really intense.
Yes.
Like immediately following this.
Right.
So April of 2021. So we are almost, well, we're more than a year out from initially engaging the chapel. The threats have continued. They're getting worse and worse. People have broken glass outside my windows. They've written on my windows. They're creeping around my house. We had engaged law enforcement, and it's just, it's intense. So I'm getting desperate, honestly. Like, it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm, again, cool as a cucumber on the outside, like a squirrel in traffic, because I'm trying to be like, okay, law enforcement is engaged and we're going to figure this out. But the reality is, like, we have said,
in the
meantime, I am going to work and I'm doing all the things. And like, I have three young children and like, oh my goodness. So April of 2021, Lori goes to the other executive pastor.
Not the one that was close to Kate and her abusers.
The other one.
We're going to just call him the other one.
The other one.
Right. They all have the same first name. There's so many of them.
Oh, there's so many. There's too many. Honestly, it's so confusing.
Right.
Anyway.
So what did we want from that? What were we hoping for?
So we were hoping for some protection from the church just by telling them, like, listen, this is the whole story. This is, which also is important. We were telling at this point the whole story. It wasn't just pieces of it. It wasn't just, you know, like I've done for my whole life of like with the different files in the filing cabinet. It was the whole filing cabinet. It was like, here you go. This is the whole story. Please help, honestly.
So people might say, well, what does the church possibly have to do with keeping you safe?
Well, same thing as the podcast has to do with keeping me safe. The more people that are aware of who these people are and what they're doing, the less likely it is that I could literally just disappear out of my front lawn someday. As well as just, yeah, that awareness of like, if they feel that they're being looked at and they feel that they're being examined and whatever, then they're less likely to continue doing things like threatening messages.
They're not going to think that they can just keep doing it and nobody's going to care.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to notice. And by the way, emotionally, what that says to you is your voice matters and you matter.
Right. We were also still super concerned about this complicit abuser being in a counseling role. We learned that some of the women from the Circle C situation were currently being counseled. So they're sexual abuse survivors currently being counseled by my complicit abuser, which honestly, I think that piece of information like lit the match for me to be like, yes, let's go. And we got to tell these people the whole story. Like, honestly, out of concern for these women, like, I know who she is. This is the life that I lived. And I'm hearing that these women who are already going through so much are being counseled. But like, yeah, that was the thing that was like, okay, yes, we need protection. Yes, we need help, but also this.
So can we just lay out very clearly the timeline?
Yeah.
January of 2020. I go to the counseling pastor to express the concerns about the complicit abuser still being in a counseling role. We don't lay out the whole story, but enough, including the fact that she was inappropriately talking about the women she was counseling. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is all laid out in January of 2020. In March, the spring through summer of 2020, within months of that conversation, that counseling pastor appointed Kate's complicit abuser to support women who were trying to come forward against a very powerful pastor. Mm-hmm. Who thinks that's a good idea?
Right, right, right. Salty. So, yeah, a little salty. Coming in hot. Just kidding. Okay. So before we went to the other executive pastor, the night before, I sent an email to the other executive
the one that was close
to me and to my abusers, who had walked through this since August of 2019 with us, sort of. I sent him an email also with, here's the whole story. Like, we've talked about it. We've talked about pieces of it. I've given you some of the files. You know some of the files. But here is the whole story. Also, I just want to just note, because I don't know if we note it later, but between November of 2019 and this point, April 2021, Lori and I both had gone to this person, and because he has young children who also are connected to my abusers, and said, like, please don't let them babysit. And he would ask why. And it was like, we are still figuring that out. But at a minimum, they're just not safe people. Please don't let them babysit.
Why would you risk it?
Basically? Why would you risk it? Right. Exactly. So instead of his response being like, oh my goodness, I'm heartbroken and protective.
About you sharing the whole story.
About me sharing the whole story in April of 2021. Within literally days of me sending that email. So he now has the whole story in his inbox, right? He's read it. He's responded. Within days, the law enforcement that we were, you know, had been working with shows up at my abuser's house to confront them and finds that my abusers are babysitting that staff member's children.
Yeah.
Which is just literally, it just made my self sink.
Well, everyone listening is vomiting right
yeah.
now.
So yeah.
Hopefully not literally.
I mean, yeah, that's gross. Sorry. Like, guys, come on.
I could have said that differently.
You know, right? We already have talked about the cherry on the poop sundae. Right. So.
We are just a mess.
Okay. We are.
Squirrel. Okay. Okay. So weeks go by.
Weeks.
So once upon, like, somewhere in a previous podcast, we kind of referenced that it was months, but it was actually 3 weeks. But frankly, that is irrelevant, because what should have happened is immediately, April 2021, conversation is had about the whole story. Immediately, like that day, the day after, the complicit abuser should have been removed from her role. That's a no-brainer. I am quite certain that anyone listening to this would consider that a very obvious protective step.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, weeks went by.
You know who's listening to this that's like losing her mind right now, but she already knows the story, is my boss from the clinic, because it's all volunteer based. And like, we both have acknowledged to each other, like, right? Like, you remove the volunteer. That's just a no brainer. Like, you always, always err on the side of, even if the, that's a soapbox for another
quite
day.
Quite obvious.
Yeah.
So finally, I don't know what else to do. I have no, like, the only resource, the only thing I have to kind of hold anybody accountable is the role that I play in one of the ministries. And so I send a letter saying I'm taking my toys and going home, everyone. Bottom line, I'm pulling my giving from the chapel. I'm pulling my activities from the ministry. And finally, within days of that, they finally remove the complicit abuser, but with the intent to conduct their own investigation.
Their own investigation.
Which we talked about.
How many times? Okay.
Yes. So ultimately, you know, in the beginning, honestly, Kate and I were like, okay, right. We don't really want to do that. But if that's what it's going to take to make sure that there's safety and that this can move forward, all right, let's talk about what that looks like. But the more the conversation went on, the more it was obvious that they weren't going to pay someone who actually could do this well. They didn't have somebody that they was capable, was qualified, right? They were just looking for people whose judgment they might trust. It just was so clear that this was more like out of some level of skepticism rather than actually a desire to move things forward. So what they eventually say is that there's nothing more they can do without a conviction from law enforcement or a direct confession. We've said that before.
Which, yeah, we've referenced. I just want to make a quick note here that it is very sad to me still to this day that the ministry that you pulled your support from to support me and to get these things to move forward is actually an incredible ministry. Yes. And it makes me sad that it came to that, honestly, because
right. they're doing good work.
They're doing good work there. And that makes me really sad. But that's, you know, that's what happens. Yeah. So they started their own investigation. They complained that I was unwilling to answer questions, but what they meant by questions was basically questions that came from a place of skepticism and also detailed questions. Like they wanted like who, what, where, why, and when. Like this is not a legal investigation. I've already done this with law enforcement. Like, no.
And by the way, I was answering questions. So we were not going to put Kate in that position where she had lived through that. But with Kate's permission, I was answering as many of those questions from both the clinical perspective of kind of like if you've listened to like trauma and memory, those kinds of things, but also some small details to try to go like, no, really. No, for real. Mm-hmm. Like, here's some of the specifics that maybe will help you.
Yeah. All the information that Lori had shared in previous podcasts about why she believes me and my, you know, trauma and memory, she shared all of that with the chapel at this point. So someone who is very close to me, who was a longtime volunteer, a board member at one time, and then a staff member, was also really pushing from the inside out. He was on staff at the time, and he was like, 100%, this cannot go on. This cannot be your reaction. This is unacceptable. A lot of emails went back and forth between him and the director of the counseling ministry and the executive pastors and the lead pastor. And it was like falling on deaf ears, like honestly just falling on deaf ears. He finally came to a place of resigning, you know, there for a lot of reasons. There were other reasons involved, but one of the main reasons being that it was in part due to the chapel's inability to handle this correctly. His resignation letter says that, and it went to both executive pastors, the lead pastor, as well as the board. But still nothing comes from this. Still there is no support. And when this person talked to other people after he resigned, the comments were, well, we don't not believe her.
Which, what does that even mean?
Can we take a moment for a silence there? We don't not believe her. What does that even mean?
It means nothing. So we like, okay, look, we've done our thing. We've tried to bring it to people's attention, but we've got other fish to fry over here. So we've got
more work to do. Honestly, yes. The boxes are now open. This whole experience with the chapel was traumatizing in itself. And just like, once again, like, their words are ringing true in my head. No one will believe you. We own you. We will never fall because no one will ever believe you. You were made for this. So good luck trying is basically the message that was running through my head. Like, yep, once again, they were right. My abusers were right because people just can't, you know?
And so that has been a recurring theme for Kate and I of working through and needing for her to know for sure, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I won't be shaken.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
And that's hard when there are so many places where she is, prior to the podcast, where she was seeing people not support her.
Right. Yeah. So final straw, 2022, January 2nd, 2022,
the counseling pastor
stands on stage at the chapel. So he
was doing the sermon that day.
Yep. Stands on stage and in front of thousands of people, supports my abusers publicly. He says that he's in a community group with them and that he's so thankful for them, mentions them by name, and says that he's so thankful to be in community with them because he just thinks they're awesome.
Okay. So can we please make sure, folks, that we're not splitting hairs about what exactly was said? So please don't leave comments like that's not exactly what he said. It doesn't really matter exactly what
he
said.
The point is he supported them from a public stage.
Right.
After all of this information. All of this. Yeah. So after so much hurt that had already happened with the chapel and all of the things and the threats that are still coming and all the things, this was the catalyst that set off the podcast. Again, not in retribution, not for revenge, but just like
they don't get it.
They don't get it. And this can't continue. This can't continue to be the narrative. So February 2022, we start a podcast. We're podcasters.
Are we? We don't know yet.
Well.
Tell us, people.
You let us know. Are we podcasters or are we just like losers who do a podcast?
Well, sometimes.
I know, right? Probably 50-50. Anyway, so, okay. So you might be thinking as you're listening to all this, like, okay, this isn't good. And maybe, you know, the chapel can be helped to do it better next time, which is honestly what we had hoped for all along, right? Like, right. That was always the hope and the intention. And if they don't know how to do it, Lori is so good at doing it. Like, let's help her, like, help me help you.
Okay.
You know?
And let me just say, I have said repeatedly to people, I have gotten it wrong. I have. I'm not perfect. I'm not standing in judgment saying you have to get it right every single time right out the gate. But when I've gotten it wrong, I have, with a broken spirit, gone to the people and just humbled myself to say, and obviously sitting here saying, not this time. Mm-hmm. I will not get it wrong anymore.
Yeah.
But that's not what we have found.
Right. We wanted to help them do better. We wanted, you know, to help them do it right. But as we've been doing the podcast, more and more and more has come to light. And we find out that there are way more instances with the chapel specifically that have the exact same pattern of behaviors, of responses, the whole pattern over and over and over again. We've heard from several people who have been so surprised and disappointed by the pattern of failing to default to protecting the victim and truly covering things up.
Which, see how hard that is for us to say?
It's very hard to say, because that is not right. We never set out to do this podcast for revenge or retribution. We set out to do this podcast so that I could tell my story, so that I could be safer, and so that other people around me could also be safe.
We were never even really planning to address this piece like this.
We weren't. But then it was like people came out of the woodwork and stories came to us, and it blows my mind. But so one of those stories is, some people may be aware of this, in May of 2018, a mother at the Lockport campus alleged that her toddler daughter was sexually abused in the children's ministry at Lockport. It's a long story, but several people, including herself, people close to her, and peripheral people who really don't know her but just kind of watched it all unfold, have told us that there was an emphasis on maintaining the status quo from the executive pastor. A newspaper article that was done about it quotes the executive pastor saying, "We took our directions from the police. They never asked us to remove any volunteer. If they had, we would have removed that person immediately." But again, hang on. Same pattern. Abuse is alleged. The mother comes to the chapel and says, "I think my daughter was sexually abused here." The default reaction should be the next day to call that volunteer and say, or if they didn't know exactly which volunteer, to call all the volunteers in that room and say, "Listen, someone is alleging that this happened. So for her protection, for other kids' protection, and honestly for your protection as a volunteer, we're going to shift things around. We're going to ask everybody to step back for a minute until we can figure out what is going on here.
Why would you risk the possibility of leaving someone with toddlers?
Yep. That was one. Another woman who came to us told us that she had addressed
the counseling pastor in 2013
of allegations of abuse, and that he brushed her off again.
Okay, let's be clear about that. The woman did not come and say that the counseling pastor abused her.
Oh, no.
She came to say that he had brushed off someone else who came to him with an abuse concern from someone else, and he, in the late 90s. So this was, she came in 2013 to address something that happened long ago in the hopes of making him sensitive to making sure he didn't do it wrong again.
Right.
That was 2013.
Right. In October 2020, a lawsuit was filed against the chapel alleging that the chapel ignored complaints about a gentleman who, there was allegations from the 80s, 90s of sexual abuse. Again, why are they not horrified that the chapel has failed to protect this boy who's now suffering into his adulthood because of their failure to act? Like, they're currently in this lawsuit. Like, right. We also are aware of another man who has come forward regarding that abuse. Or no.
Actually, separate.
Separate. Okay. Thing. Another man who came forward regarding his own abuse that happened also there in his teens. The lead pastor, we are very well aware.
Because he's publicly said, acknowledged. Yep,
was approached years before the allegation against Circle C and Wayne Arum became public. And yet the chapel, for all of those years between when he was originally approached and when it became public, were still kids from the youth group were still being sent to Circle C. We have spoken to many of these people involved in these different circumstances, as well as, like I said, peripheral people, like people who don't even know these people, but know how it unfolded. People who just understand what happened.
Who have the peripheral puzzle pieces.
Yeah. We've done our homework. We have done a lot of research. We would absolutely not be calling this. We would not be calling the chapel out on the mat if we hadn't done our research. And what we learned is that the pattern just keeps continuing. There is an incredibly clear pattern of minimizing and, in some regards, covering up sexual abuse allegations at the chapel.
Which is heartbreaking. It's really hard to say. Like,
it's really hard to say.
We really tried to find some other explanation.
We did.
But, yep.
You can't ignore the repeated pattern. It's not one time. It's not even two times. It's six times, seven times. Right?
Sometimes publicly, which mm-hmm. I think part of it for me was like, okay, if you're saying that publicly, mm-hmm. then you apparently think that that's an okay response. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we keep getting told, well, hindsight is 2020. That's what the phrase that keeps getting thrown back at us. Well, hindsight is 2020 the first time, maybe even the second time. But how many times can you say that? You know, how many times can you say, like,
oops,
right? I just, yeah.
Yeah.
So this has to end. Enablers of all kinds, the chapel, all, you know, other, I mean, obviously they're not the only people that are enablers in my story for sure. But enablers need to be called out and held accountable for their actions because, yes, the abusers are responsible for the abuse, but the enablers, there's a responsibility there too, right? Yes. If you're in a position to help and you don't, you then are also responsible for either the continuation of or whatever. Like I said, the chapel is only one of the enablers in many of these stories and definitely in my story. But they are also a leader in the Church of Western New York, in the greater Church of Western New York. So honestly, they have to be held accountable for allowing this to continue. Hindsight is 2020.
Right. But so is it should be 2020 once it's been brought to your attention.
Exactly.
The truth of the matter is there was ample information available that would have both because they at the time that we came to them, they had had enough experiences where they had not defaulted to protecting the victim, that they should have been heartbroken over that. And we provided them with enough information that they should have understood that there was a protection to be had.
Right. The lead pastor, after all of the information and the sexual abuse stories came out about Circle C and Wayne Arum, made a statement publicly. And he said, we must do better. We must. But then they didn't. And they're still not. Not April 2021 didn't do it right. Like today, last Friday, still not doing it right. Right.
Still making excuses, still minimizing the impact, still slow to act.
Right. And basically, like, as long as enablers are allowed to enable, abusers will keep abusing. They will keep hiding in these places. They will move from church to church, organization to organization, and they will continue to do these things because they're able to. So why would they stop? It should always be the default to stand with the victim, always, which is what we keep saying over and over and over again.
And we will keep saying it until it happens.
So a couple things just to round it out. Number one, There's going to be some stuff that we're going to publish on our Instagram page. So if you don't already follow us on Instagram, please do. If you have Instagram or if you Instagram, it's actually like a verb.
Is it?
Do you Instagram? Sorry.
Nope.
No, you don't. Nor should you. But just, you know, we've put together a written document of kind of, what we just shared here. And so we just people to read it. Secondly, where do we go from here? The goal of our podcast is not to, for us personally to hold, you know, we are holding the chapel accountable, but that's not really ours to even do. And so I guess what we're hopeful for is that other local pastors and other people in the church and in the community will hold them accountable. We'll say, hey, I heard this and this does not sit well with me. So what are we going to do about it? You know, I don't know what that looks like exactly. We don't know what that looks like.
But you know what the good thing is? We shouldn't have to figure that out.
No.
There are perfectly capable leaders in our area and beyond our area that can and hopefully will step up and help move this forward.
Yeah. So I think our next episode.
We keep thinking this
and then other things happen. But I think our next episode is about my last escape attempt.
No, This is my last.
Yes. but an escape attempt that happened in college. So yes, these things continued all the way through college. And we will share that.
We are also going to be recording some episodes with some of these peripheral people. So yeah. You can hear directly from them.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. Okay. So thank you so much for listening. Please, if you feel compelled, share it, like it, like us on Instagram, because we podcasters now.
And on that note, goodbye. 1-800-273-8255 If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.